You're listening to The Shot Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose Vodka Martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly.
Will you fast right away? Like, is it the equivalent of, like, you step on a court and do a 360 dunk? Like, were you like, holy shit, I'm fast?
From the time I came out in high school, that first time I ran, like, organized track, at the end of high school, I went pro, and the next year I was in the Olympics. So it
Come
all
on
happened.
In the
3 months later, I was in Athens winning gold medals. Yeah.
On this episode of The Shop Uninterrupted, Maverick Carter and Paul Rivera are joined by Tiana Taylor.
I think success is actually the greatest revenge. I think success and grace is the greatest revenge. You know, for me, it's grace over grudges all the time.
Allison Felix.
Yeah, I went through kind of a really dark period. Basically, even before I got pregnant, I was offered 70% less than what I had been previously making.
Tabitha Brown.
You know, in the last 5 or 6 years, coming from a dark space of being sick, I had to really get to a place where I said, you know what, God, if you heal me, you can have me.
Bobby Hundreds.
We're celebrating our 20th year, which is wild, because it seems like we just started it 2 years ago.
And Babyface.
I write all the time.
At least a couple times a week in the studio, still doing it. I don't do it as much as I used to.
Check it out.
Thank you for coming on. You guys are all amazing people and legends, but we have to give it up to a legend who is here with us, Mr. Babyface, who defines how we live, how we think, what we listen to.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You for showing.
Yeah, 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 it's good.
I told Face, I saw him over there bobbing his head earlier, to be, I'm like, he's probably writing a hit. Face, how often do you write still?
I write all the time, at least a couple times a week in the studio. To doing it. I don't do it as much as I used to, but.
But you do go in the studio.
If I'm here and if I don't have other things to do, then I go daily.
What instruments you play?
Play guitar and keyboards.
Guitar, keyboards, right, and then of course you sing. You've done it all in music. Was that always the goal from the beginning to do?
Nah, I was just wanted to play guitar and write songs. That was really it. Just wanted to, I got a crush on a girl and wanted to write a song.
it always starts that
girl,
way.
Man.
I was actually told a funny story. By Jimmy Iovine, who said he was the engineer for John Lennon. You know the story.
Yeah.
And he says, John Lennon asked him, Jimmy, why do you do this? And he says, it's fucking John Lennon. So I'm going to be, because I love the music and I love the way the drums and the music and when it's harmonized and it's just amazing, giving this very technical answer. And he goes, so John, why do you do this? And John looks at him and goes, to get girls?
Exactly.
But that's the way. And did you teach yourself guitar?
I taught myself.
She didn't like the song.
I'm sure she regretted now.
I just wasn't the one. I just wasn't the one.
So she probably sitting around somewhere tight. Like, you're probably like, damn.
That's how you know that women are the more powerful gender.
For sure.
You would never hear the stories the other way around. It's always, we do all this to impress a girl and try, and we never get them, but the women are just like, we're just doing our thing.
I'm still trying to impress that girl.
Absolutely.
I'm a seventh grade girl walking, I'm still want to impress her.
Absolutely.
And by the way, but then that launched your career.
That's what I was about to say.
That's what I'm saying. She probably sitting there like, the girl. Damn.
By the way, is revenge a great way to launch something in success? Is that the
I
best success?
Success is the greatest revenge. I think success and grace.
Yeah.
Is the greatest revenge. You know, for me, it's grace over grudges all the time. So to just like do everything you love successfully and with grace, I mean, that's what I said. She probably sitting around somewhere tight. Like, damn. Like, damn.
I wonder if he want to talk now.
Right. You know, Babyface, go and give me a call.
Right.
Because to your point, we're all human. Like, when somebody does something to us, you definitely want to get them back, right?
Oh, yeah. You
and, like, success, I agree with you. Success is, like, just gracefully don't engage and just go crush it, and that's the best reward.
Grace means you have no desire to get them back.
Really?
That's
but we're not going all the way. Literal grace?
Yeah. I'm saying 30%
grace. Right. Like 80% grace, you know, just, or maybe still 100% grace, just without the, I don't think it's about getting back. It's just you're successfully, you know, I'm still going to look at you and smile because you know what you did. You know what I'm saying? So it's not really like I'm trying to get back.
Yeah.
But I do feel like the greatest revenge is, you know, success, but doing it gracefully. Some people get successful and be like, yeah, remember me? Remember when you was like,
Exactly.
That's not grace.
That's not graceful.
Yeah. We saw that with Michael B. Jordan was on the red carpet. And there was a woman interviewing him for Creed on the red carpet. And I think she went to high school with him.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And he said a version of what, like what you just said. He's basically said to her, I think he said, remember.
Yeah, but she's just doing her job in interviewing.
She's doing her job. Yeah, she asked him a question. She goes, remember y'all called me
corny.
Yeah. Corny. Remember the corny? I'm the corny kid. Remember
like,
me?
No, I'm the. No. She's like, no. He goes, yeah. He double dug. He goes, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, he goes, no, it was you.
Yeah, it was you. I remember.
But so I agree with you. I don't mean to Tiana's point, like getting them back, like, literally, I got to go punch them back.
Right.
Got to get them back. I'm just going to go do my thing.
Yeah.
And I know they will see it and feel it.
That's what I'm saying. I know you see it. Like, I see you.
Look at her. You can tell.
How you been? How's everything?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They hit you with the, I'm so proud of you.
That's called killing them with kindness.
I'm so proud of you.
By the way.
So it's not like an intentional.
By the way, he knows that's one of my pet peeves. Was I'm 41 years old, and somebody comes to me like, you know, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, I'm not six. You're like.
I love that, though. I love the cheerleading. You know? You proud. I think that's a great thing, no matter what age. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because honestly, sometimes you get, you know, so high up that people are more so complaining about, oh, you too this. Like, you got time. And there's nobody really taking out the time to be like, yo, I don't know if anybody told you today, but I'm, like, really proud of you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Some people still need that. I still need it.
Absolutely.
I love that because I love to cheer other people on. So I could never really feel too old to accept a proud of you.
Agreed.
You know what I'm saying?
It's kind of better that way because there's so much hate on everybody.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
you're
right.
So busy getting everything else you could be doing.
So Tabitha, you obviously had grace with Wendy Williams.
I did.
Does everybody know what happened with that one? Tell us a bit about it.
The loop, these kids are driving me crazy. What's happening?
I was working early in the morning in my office, right? And my phone was buzzing and people were texting me like, Wendy Williams is talking about you on the show. I was like, oh my Lord, I didn't know Wendy knew me. I was like, let me see. And I was like, oh, I had made an announcement. I was retiring my husband. And so she didn't know who I was.
I'll take that.
Right?
Retired me all day.
She said what she felt about it. And I just really didn't care. I was like, oh, because people say stuff about me all the time. So I put my phone back down. But in that moment, I went back to working and God was like, I need you to give
me a break. What did she say again, exactly?
I don't even remember the exact words, but it was just pretty much she was saying that my husband was going to do me wrong just like her husband did.
Got it.
And so she was projecting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, God was like, give her grace in this moment. And so I just did a video and just said, you know, first of all, I can only imagine that the pain that she must be in wish ill will.
Because that's usually what it is. It's not about
like
you, it's her pain.
Like, yeah, she was dissing you. It's more like, you know, talking through her own pain.
It was projected.
Like, your point, it's like you ain't got to group all of us in that. Like,
exactly.
Your experience don't have nothing to do with mine. And,
right.
You get what I'm saying? So
and so that was really it. And then I just prayed for her.
I think you're right. It didn't really have anything to do with you.
Exactly. Yeah, it was
she
all
was just
her.
Like, what's going to happen to her, too? And
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. And so my thing was, everybody thought I was, like, gave her this, like, shady read. They was like, oh, she cursed out without curse words. And I was like,
you be doing these reads with a smile on your face. I say the way you want, but you be doing them.
I be giving the grace, okay?
The grace. There it is.
In my own way.
There it is.
But the reason I think people were sharing it and had so much to say about it is because nobody had ever given Wendy grace. Everybody would always
tough on her, yeah.
It was always the get back spirit. Mm-hmm.
But Tabitha, where's that come from for you? Like, we can look back at it and think about it with that grace, but in the moment, right? Like, our first reaction as humans sometimes is to be like, oh, I'm going to show you, right?
Yeah,
like, where's that come from for you? Like,
for me, I mean, I feel like it's just the work that I've been doing as I've been healing, right, on my own journey. You know, in the last 5 or 6 years, coming from a dark space of being sick, I had to really get to a place where I said, you know what, God, if you heal me, you can have me. And I meant it. And that was almost 6 years ago. Yeah. And in saying that, something changed inside of me. And I no longer wanted to be in charge of me. I wanted to be who he created me to be.
Surrender.
And I completely surrendered, mm-hmm. submitted myself to him. That doesn't mean that I'm not triggered, right? Yeah. But when something happens.
I'll get triggered.
Right? We all, because
you're human. Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm human and I'm on a healing journey. Healing is not permanent because you can still get triggered. And so I can feel something, but because I'm on a journey, I know I need to take a minute. I'll know if I'm triggered by something. I'll be like, wait a minute, Tab, you about to react in a way that you shouldn't react.
Yeah.
You didn't work too hard on this,
yeah.
right? And so I just take a moment. Anytime we react out of emotion, it's most time not the right reaction.
Yeah.
You ain't processed
yet. Take a moment.
So yeah, so I just take time with it.
Did you ever talk to Wendy?
I've never talked to her, but I pray for her every day since.
I think that would be a great conversation because sometimes also just seeing, like if you could look at her and say, okay, I can only imagine the pain you're going through. I think the best of the grace is probably even reaching out and whatever way you can, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's like, you just never know who's crying out for help.
Absolutely.
I would love to embrace her and show her love and grace in person.
So.
Well, look at our special guest today. I take my mask off. I'm on here.
But by the way, I was, as an athlete though, getting back is a part of the thing, like, especially in your sport.
Yeah, y'all athletes is
that's
petty.
Different, right?
Yeah. Petty as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, I love when somebody tells me I can't do something. Or if somebody.
Or you race for a living, like if Jane Doe beats you, like the next race, I'm getting her back, right? You need that,
yes,
right?
Yes, I think you do. And sometimes I think you build it into, you know, maybe something happened and it's not that big, but you make it bigger because you need that, like you feed off of it. Mm. So for me, it definitely motivates me and drives me and, you know, to reach a new height that I didn't even know. And then it's like, okay, I'm grateful that this happened.
But you're
but
so
quiet. But y'all know you probably look back and smirk at that same girl.
Yeah, listen,
yeah.
You're so quiet and beautiful and graceful.
The walk-off.
But did you ever end up on the track, or was there ever a competitor that you ended up like, y'all had some words out there? Because you're competing, it's kind of, I know it's in there.
I usually keep it pretty cute.
Yeah, you ran with a she kicked everybody's ass with a smile for sure.
Facts.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's healthy. Like
for
it's a part of it, and it's a competitive sport. You know, you're going up against people, and it's just
At what age when did you start running?
I didn't start running until high school.
Really?
That's late, right?
That's late for wow, really?
So you didn't know when you.
I knew I was athletic. Like I was always, I have an older brother and I was always just trying to keep up with him. Basketball was actually my first love, but it was like very apparent that I wasn't going to be it. So I made my way to track. I kind of stumbled into it. I actually went out for the team to meet people and find friends. And then I had a great coach early on who, you know, spent the time invested in me. And
so were you fast right away? Like, is it the equivalent of like, you step on a court and do a 360 dunk, like, were you like, holy shit, I'm fast?
I mean, from the time I came out in high school, that first time I ran, like, organized track, at the end of high school, I went pro, and the next year, I was in the Olympics. So it
come
all
on at the end of high school.
Hey, you're like, when did you know? She's like, the time I stepped on the track.
She's like, oh, when I was lacing my spikes up for that first
meet.
She's
like, not only me, everyone
like,
knew.
3 months later, I was in Athens winning gold medals. Yes.
The question is, did you know from the get-go that you were that good? Did you know it?
And did you love it?
I did not know.
And did you love it?
I don't, from the beginning, I don't think I was deeply in love with it. I was like, okay, here's a way to get to college. You know, here's a way to travel.
Mm.
I saw it as like my way out.
Survival.
And then, and then it was like, I didn't even know. I didn't grow up like watching the Olympics or anything.
Right, right.
So I didn't know this could be like a career path. So when people started telling me that and they started talking about shoe deals and stuff, I was like,
okay.
All right.
Like, say what now?
Well, you bring up an interesting point talking about shoe deals.
Yeah.
You've challenged Nike, and keep me honest here. When you were pregnant, I think there was a situation with Nike on maternity leave.
Yeah, I went through kind of a really dark period. Basically, even before I got pregnant, I was offered 70% less than what I had been previously making.
Mm.
And there was a lot of fear even in starting a family because what I had seen in my sport was women's contracts being paused. I saw them hiding pregnancies.
So when you say contracts being paused, someone gets pregnant and your sponsorship is,
Yeah.
Because you can't compete.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And you said hiding a pregnancy too.
Wow.
Yeah, so women were hiding pregnancies. And so when I found myself in that situation, I kind of felt like, well, I think I've accomplished enough. Like at that point, yeah. I had been to 4 Olympics. I was a 6-time Olympic champion. I was like, I think I'm safe. Like I'm good.
Yeah, you're like, but, I'm me. That's the point.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I found myself in a very similar situation. And instead of like the financial fight, I turned my fight towards asking for maternal protection. And basically, the way that track and field contracts work is that they're performance-based. So you go to the Olympics, you get a medal, you get a bonus. You don't, you get a reduction. So if you become pregnant, there's nothing in place to protect you.
Wow.
So I was essentially just asking for that. And I was actually told that I could have time for that, that would be fine. But when the contract came back, there was no legal wording to tie it to pregnancy. And so that meant that it wouldn't set that precedent. Like, I would be okay, but all the other women that I had seen for years.
Which is a big deal. You wanted
the one there right there, exactly.
But I was terrified. You know, it's Nike. Like,
of course.
And we had a great relationship. I was
You've been with them forever.
Yeah, almost a decade at that point.
Wow.
So it was really scary, but, you know, I came forward. I left over that, but they changed the policy after the op-ed came out. It was about 2 weeks later, and now they offer 18 months of protection.
That's awesome.
Wow. That's amazing.
Big deal, brother. And now, by the way, we were talking earlier, you're retired.
I'm retired.
When spring and track season comes around, can you feel your body like...
It's so weird. It's bizarre.
You can literally feel like, we're supposed to be somewhere.
I keep feeling like, I gotta be ready. Like, you know, somebody's gonna wanna race me. Like, I need to be like in full training mode. So I'm still like navigating that. Like, it's a very strange space to be in. I'm trying to figure it out. But I always heard people say like, it's really hard, you know, retiring and pivoting to your next thing. And it is really hard.
And can you turn that off? Or like, are you like in the hotel gym? You
working
out on the treadmill and you're like, beep, beep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still getting it in.
I love it.
Gotta be ready for that race.
I love that.
Because in the back of her head, somebody want to try her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay ready, right?
Yeah.
Gotta stay ready. Face, will you ever retire? You always make music.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's the one thing that, you know, it's life.
Yeah.
You know, it's what I love. And I don't see, unless you have to stop, you know, and I don't see any reason having to stop, you know. I've been fortunate and blessed enough to be able to work with, you know, younger artists and just every artist from every genre. So it's a little, I've been blessed enough to, I've been able to do that.
And you love the younger artists that you work with now. That a lot different than what you guys were doing in the 90s, right?
A little different in the sense that, you know, I used to write all the words and write everything. Today, you know, you can't write the words for me. Say, you know? No, I ain't saying that. I wouldn't say it that way. and it's actually fun to write with everyone and to get their sense of things, because things are different. People, they talk different, they say things different. Meanings are the same. It's still, everybody still gets their heart broken, still falls in love. But it's a different feeling.
You've spoken about heartbreak. I'm curious to know your point of view on, do you think artists make their best work through pain or heartbreak?
Not all, but I mean, that's what I thrived on.
Okay.
You thrived on it?
He didn't even get his girl.
Started his whole career. His whole career is based on heartbreak.
Yeah.
So fucking
funny. Right. And he still didn't even get the girl.
No, but I thrived on heartbreak. I thrived on pain that was in voices. And when I first heard Toni Braxton, the pain that was in her voice, Mary J, the pain that she had, that's like, that gets me excited. I was like, ooh, I can write for that. But through the pain and through the heartbreak, then there comes the other side of it. And you do find love and that feeling. And so a lot of times when I would write songs, I'd remember that pain that I felt as a kid and from 7th and 8th grade. And I go to that place because it's so passionate, then you feel that stronger than any time in your life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I would use, you know, when I'm writing a song.
And Tiana, and your new movie deals with a lot of pain, a mother and the child. How do you get, as an actor, how do you get yourself? Because you could be having a lovely day, but then you show up on set and you have to convey pain. How did you do that in the new movie?
I mean, I just went back to what I was literally dealing with at that moment. You know, I was 6 months postpartum. So I was dealing with postpartum depression, And then just being back at home, like being back in my hood, you know, performing in Harlem and shit, like I lost a lot of friends and family. So I was going to funerals during my lunch breaks. You know what I'm saying? So Tuesday I was at this funeral, Friday I'm at this funeral. So it's just like I had to take everything I was going through and kind of like put it into Inez, my character. The hardest part was going home and flipping the switch and just being super mom. You know what I'm saying? Because I had an outlet. I finally had an outlet to be able to have my moment of weakness and just kind of break down, scream, yell, cry. So it was really easy to...
It's almost therapeutic?
Yeah, in a way. Because, I mean, you know, having a newborn, it's never any real time for you, you know, to think, to cry, to everything's about the baby because you already panicking. And even though you already got a kid, when you have a newborn, it just still feels different. Mm-hmm. You know, like my oldest was 6 when I had, you know, my youngest. So I'm like, I don't remember happening. Is she okay? You need to pamper, oh my God. You know what I'm saying? So you so occupied in just being mom and being a superhero all the time. You don't got time to think, cry, feel, or anything, you know? So I think that it was like, yeah, it was therapeutic to be able to go on set and be weak.
You remind me a lot of like the female version of like Jamie Foxx. Like, you're so talented, right? Like, no one can fuck with you on the dancing thing. Style, I mean, look at you, style-wise. Like, you have all these things that you're super ill at. Do you feel because you're great at so many things that you maybe don't get credit for any one thing as much as you should?
Honestly, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, people just, you know, sometime it take that one thing to make people like finally wake up without pressing snooze. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when our alarm go off, we hit that snooze 6 times. Every 5 minutes, that shit coming back up. You feel what I'm saying? But I think like even moments like this with the movie, I think this is like the moment to open up everybody's eyes and go back to doing all the other things that I love. Cause in my time, I looked at it like, okay, this weight is just punishment. Like, God, what's going on? What's happening? Not realizing that the weight wasn't punishment, it was preparation.
One of the main goals for each episode of The Shop is to share and learn from the unique experiences of all our guests as we curate conversations with those who are shaping culture. What I've learned is that through the journey, you know, all the hard work, the hustle, and the consistency, it's always important to celebrate your wins. So do it in style and raise a glass to toast the unforgettable moments that continue to make us who we are. Toast to your wins with a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Check out greygoose.com for smooth-tasting recipes. And remember, sip responsibly. The Shop podcast is presented by Grey Goose Vodka.
And Bobby, you were obviously with the Hundreds, which is one of the most legendary streetwear brands ever. Yours is all about community. Like, how have you created that community, kept it together, and they're so loyal to everything that you do? And how long has the Hundreds been around, by the way?
We're celebrating our 20th year.
Wow.
Which is wild, because it seems like we just started it 2 years ago. I still feel like it was my partner, my friend Ben, and I sitting in our apartment, just drawing sketches on T-shirts and writing stories.
What was the inspiration? What was, like, driving to that?
Honestly, it was just I wanted to be heard. I felt like I was excluded from every conversation. Nobody wanted to hear anything I had to say my entire life. I was a middle child. I grew up being a brown person in a predominantly white neighborhood. There was definitely no Asian Americans in the vicinity. And I was just drawn to these marginal subcultures, these fringe interests like skateboarding and hardcore music and punk and backpack rap and graffiti. And there was no place for it in mainstream culture. So I'm watching film, listening to music, and nobody's speaking my language. And then it came to a point where I was like, man, I just feel left out. I don't have my own community, but if I build a brand, I can create my own world. And so that's what I champion when I talk about entrepreneurialism and I'm inspiring young people to build brands or start off their careers. I'm like, if you don't see a place for yourself in the world, make one. And then you can create a home for others to be welcome, to be included in, and it becomes a really beautiful, remarkable experience for everybody. And that's then it inspires them to do the same, you know? And so everybody wins.
But are you okay with, as you said, your inspiration came from being a part of these subcultures, right? Whether it was skating, streetwear, and now those subs, because what happens, right, those subs become, skating became this thing that a guy like me, who's never been on a skateboard in my life, but I wear skateboard shoes, and I like skateboard culture. So skateboarding becomes this thing that, oh, big institutions, whether it be an art gallery, a company, see these subs and start using these subs to grow their business? Are you okay? Do you like that? Because then the sub is no longer the sub.
I think the tension is important.
It's a bit like hip-hop, right? Hip-hop started as this sub thing.
Absolutely.
And then it became, that was the biggest genre in the world.
I think there needs to be this exchange. You know, skateboarding is a great example because if it had stayed the subculture that it would have been this really great secret cool guy club, secret handshake club in the background that no one would have been aware of.
Well, hip-hop also took it too.
Yeah.
Right, because I remember my first exposure to skateboard culture was through Pharrell, actually.
Absolutely, yes.
And his style. I never fathomed P was a skateboarder. Mm-hmm. He was called Skateboard P, right? And then Wayne and then Nike and Bape came. So.
Yeah.
But yes, to your point.
No, but now big designers are coming too. My only issue with the big designers with the skate shoes, I used to skate, I was also signed to Pharrell as well, is like that I feel like the skaters are excluded.
No, that's my question. Is that
if you're gonna have some like high designer like Dior skater, like let me see somebody on a skateboard doing a kick something, you know, in the campaign. You know what I'm saying? But honestly, it's become a blueprint for a lot of like big designers that are making the skate shoes.
Totally.
Right.
And I don't really see a lot of skateboarders around. And then I ain't going for I'll wear a few because them should be fire. You know, I'm keep it a beam. But of course in my head I'm like, I'm DC's, I'm Etnies, I'm you feel me? Like the original boys, like you know what I'm saying? Soho kid. Like I know all about it. So it's like to see a big designer do it, I'm like, oh, this looks exactly like
You know, one of my favorite movies was Rocky. And if you think about what that movie was about the champion Apollo Creed and Rocky, who was a no-name, off-the-street, underground boxer. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning of the film, Apollo realizes that he's losing touch with the streets. He's there's a disconnect from culture. And the people are kind of looking at him as, you're now becoming the villain. And so he starts looking around the streets saying, who's someone of the people that I can challenge and be welcomed back into the community? And meanwhile, Rocky's like, I just need a shot. Get me on the main stage so that I can get notoriety. People need to see how I box. And so they needed each other, and it's a dance, right?
And they became friends through that tension.
And they become friends, and then you get a remarkable film franchise out of it that continues to this day.
It never hurts, by the way, the franchise,
But where the problem becomes, and I think this is to your point, is if there's a disparity and an imbalance where the corporation is now leading the dance or starting to step all over your partner's toes. And that happens much too often.
So have you had big companies come to you to buy hundreds of partners?
Absolutely, yes.
And you've turned down? What is that? What are those conversations like?
They're really flattering at first. I talk about it in my memoir, in my book, but it's like, you know, we have like everyone from Tommy Hilfiger court us for months and years and to Echo and all these guys looking into the business. And it is really flattering, you know, when you build a business out of nothing, materialize something out of scratch, and then all of a sudden your heroes are coming and trying to offer you money for it. But at the end of look, money is great, but at the end of the day, I still would just be doing what I do every day. So even if someone paid me $200 million, which nobody's offering me that, but if you are, maybe I'll entertain.
If you
give me $100 million, I probably would spend it on a yacht or something, but I'd still be at work. I just want to create. I'm like you. I'm an artist, and I just want to make stuff and see people wear it and bring people together through the product, and I'm very happy.
But you've also,
that.
Like everybody else, wrote books and done a lot
That's
of
right.
things.
That's right, yeah.
All of you in the room do a lot of things. Is that just like who we are, or is it
that
just...
That might be, because I'm like a Glade plug-in. Listen, I'm plug me in this whole house. Don't have me trapped in the bathroom. Like, why just the bathroom smell good when the whole building can smell good? Like,
if a door open, I want to go in there and look around.
Really?
Yeah, I need to see what else is out there.
Exactly.
Is there stuff out there that you haven't done that you want to do for anybody?
Absolutely. I feel like I'm just getting started, right? Of course, my background was acting. Nobody knew that, you know, nobody knew me, rather. But I did more acting for the last, you know, over 20 years. A lot of small victories, but never anything where people would be like, oh. Sometimes every now and then people would be like, was that you? I'd be like, some stuff I don't want to, you know. I don't know. But I would love to get back into that. Like the talk show space, that type of thing. But even more business. I mean, you know, I have a hair care line, Donna's Recipe, because y'all know I call my hair Donna. And so just even building that out and doing skincare, like all these different things that I can include my family in. I just think, you know, whatever I think of, like to me, if I'm able, why not? And if I enjoy it.
That's right.
So that is a perfect segue. You not only left the swoosh, you created your own shoe.
Yeah, our brand is all about purpose. And so when I found myself without a footwear sponsor, I had at that point been to 4 Olympics, a 6-time Olympic champion, but I couldn't find a sponsor. And I was just exhausted and tired of begging.
You wouldn't talk to all the companies?
Yeah, I think because I had been so Nike branded, like.
And they didn't offer you deals, or you did like the offers they gave you? Like Adidas, the other?
Okay. Yeah, most would not offer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is insane, by the way.
And I think I was at a place in my career where I think brands saw like it was kind of like it was done, you know?
Okay, they thought you were finished.
Yeah, at that point I was, you know, I had just become a mother and all these things. And so it was like, okay, I'm gonna bet on myself. I'm gonna do this myself, and it's more about the reason behind it. And for me, it was that what we thought we were doing was just creating shoes for me to wear in the Olympics. But then we realized that sneakers are not made for women. So a shoe is made off of a last, which is just a mold of a foot, and it's a man's foot to make women's sneakers.
Very hard to make a last, no, by the way.
Yeah, it's which important. I've...
It's very important, yeah. Very hard, because, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the reason is, because people never think about it that way. All the shoes we have on, the last, literally the mold that your foot goes into, they have to make one for that shoe, that fits billions of people's feet, some people's feet are a little wider, a little skinnier, but that one last, all of our feet, so it's very hard.
But never a woman's foot.
Super expensive, millions and millions.
But why is it never a woman's foot, you know, that is in the, so that was, that's what our company Seiche does. We make shoes to fit the form of a female foot. And I think we're just so much bigger than a shoe company. To your point, it's about that purpose. I see when people are wearing my shoes, it's like, you stand with women, like you stand for saying that women deserve better and that we're not gonna be an afterthought.
Were you scared to start it? You must have been. Yeah.
Terrified. I mean, being an athlete all my life and going into this industry, it's like, just imposter syndrome. Like, I don't know enough about it. Like, I haven't been doing it long enough. But then starting to reach out to people, you know, Tiffany Beers, who's iconic shoemaker, engineer, and just, I think the help and encouragement. And that's just been really refreshing. I feel like this space has really been, people have been really helpful.
That's great.
But do you ever worry, if I do too many things, how can I be great?
No. Nope.
How can I make sure, nope, all those things, are you making sure they're all really great? You don't worry about that.
I don't, and this is why, because I do everything rooted in Tab. Exactly. I don't just put my name on anything. Like, I named my hair Donna in 2018. Right? And so everybody, listen, people know my hair before they know me. They be like, I thought that was you because I saw Donna. If I have a hair care line, it's only going to be Donna's Recipe, right? If I have a clothing line, it's going to be bright and it's going to look like me. People be like, I saw that and was like, I know this Tab. If I do it, it's rooted in every part of who I am. I ain't going to just do it just to do it. Like, the money going to come. But if I'm staying true to who I am, I ain't got to worry about like, oh, I'm not doing it well, because I know when I put my heart and my mind into it, I was putting me into it.
Yeah.
Faith, you've said the word artist a couple times, and you as a true artist, is there an album you've worked on that for us is successful and we've grown up on and all those things that you're like, I changed something. I wish I could have changed something going back in it.
Yeah, almost everything.
They're not
spoken
done,
like a true artist.
No, it does.
Yeah.
And do you have one song that's your favorite, or are they all like?
No, I don't. And it's like, a lot of times if something comes on that I've done, then I usually turn the station, because if I start listening, then I'll be like, damn, should have did this, should have did that.
That's the line about an artist. And art, we have a line in our company, as you know, is like, the work is never done. You just run out of time. Mm. An artist will work.
Yeah.
Because an artist, to his point,
it's never done.
Every song he's done, he would love to take back in the studio and fuck with the drums a little more and like just tweak it a little bit more and more. The work is never
done. Put it on a different artist. No, I'm just
I want to ask you, and you're the perfect person to ask us, the word streetwear.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Is it putting the culture, putting the genre in a box? Is that an old term?
That's a great question. It really is a good question, because no one can agree on what the definition of streetwear is. And I think that's
probably symptomatic of it's a postmodern problem today. No one can agree on what cancel culture is. No one can agree on what the virus is. And streetwear is a perfect example of that. Yeah. And it gets us into a lot of sticky territory because high fashion will start claiming streetwear as theirs. Mm-hmm. And then there's actual street brands that what I define as street brands coming out of New York and Harajuku and London that I'm like, these are the real kids that are creating streetwear. But then the spotlight's over here. Mm. I've always seen it like the media is that it's like a desk lamp. It's always going to put a halo around what they want to talk about. In the last 10 years, it was Verge and Jerry and, you know, Matt and all these amazing pioneering designers, but they were saying this was streetwear. But what's amazing to me about streetwear is it's what exists in the shadows. Exactly. And I think that's really a complicated but also important part of how subculture and culture play together. We like being the ones that are starting trends or monitoring trends and putting them on the map, and then the high fashion guys will come in and start like plucking from there. Mm. And again, it's that dance. But I think it's just, I think it's really important, and I can't emphasize enough that when we talk about streetwear, and I know the media likes to say it's this, it's really all this that you never see.
I really think streetwear is like a day-to-day manager. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how like you have two managers. You have the one that's like gonna get you all the deals and they like never really see you. And you have your day-to-day that's with you every single day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like just every single day. Like what I wear to the gas station to me is streetwear, but I've always been in streetwear kid or whatever that's supposed to mean. But when I came out at 15, like that wasn't okay. And now it's this whole big thing. So like he said, like streetwear is really just like, really I want to say the underdogs, because you know, the big dogs gonna always take the little dog food. You feel what I'm saying? And things have been taken away from me all my life. So I feel
it's
you.
It's an
know
attitude.
What I'm saying?
Like yeah. You embody yeah. the attitude of yeah. what streetwear is. It's really hard to diagnose it as a specific fashion article
right.
of clothing or a genre, because if I say
that's
a hooded
what I'm saying. It's like a day-to-day. It's like literally
day-to-day.
Whatever
it's your
is your style. When
yeah.
I walk down Soho, when I walk down this street or walk to this gas station,
right.
and I'm literally stomping on the streets,
yeah.
this is what I got on.
Yeah.
This is my streetwear. You get
yeah.
what I'm saying? But like he said, it's like everything is always being grabbed and taken somewhere else, and it's like, did you see her streetwear? And it's like, that's not, because on a regular day, you just wouldn't do that. And I feel like streetwear has become something that's this whole big thing when it's really something so simple.
Yes, it is.
You know?
It really is.
The dope side of it is for the other young girls like me, where I don't like dressy clothes. So, like, I remember one time
you've always been like that.
I've always been like this, always, since the day I came out. I remember I was talking to Kanye, and he was like, I love that you never change for anybody. Like, he was like, I ain't going front. Like, in a few years, like, how you dress, this shit gonna be in. And you never gonna have to throw on another heel. I used to be pissed. I don't wanna wear no heel. I don't wanna wear no dress. So it's like the flip side of it is now we get to be who we really wanna be. And now it's no longer a thing of, no, you have to wear this or have this certain look. So like streetwear yeah. kinda becoming mainstream is dope. Cause now I get to wear, if I do wanna wear high end, I wear a lot of vintage stuff. But if I do wanna wear high end stuff, I know that I can go and get some shit that's swaggy and I still feel like me. And I can say, well, this is Prada. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get to
It allows you to be
that.
Free.
Yeah, I get to be free.
And T, it's mean. Dope. It's not just okay now for you to do that. You're influencing the trends now.
Yeah.
Like, people
mm-hmm.
following you. So that's got to feel validating as well. Like, where at the beginning, you did, or earlier, you didn't want to do that thing, and now everyone's kind of shifted. The culture shifted
yeah,
to, like, how you've always...
I love that. It's like I've always been into just, like, you know, just wear, you know?
The imperative part of this formula is that we, as the people wearing the product and being the influencers, are constantly pushing back and putting these brands on notice.
Yes.
And so the last 2 years, we've gotten really deep into Web3 and using NFTs and crypto to actually reshape a lot of that. So we have NFTs where if you buy them and we use your art, we start giving you royalties. And
yeah.
so the consumer, they
You're
should
making
actually
them an active
be
participant.
Of participating, exactly. Mm. They should be participating in the upside somehow, right? That's the next revolution of what brands should be. You know, we're all a part of this ecosystem and everyone is influencing each other.
Reading up on you, it's like you were an actor and a comedian and, you know, and then you hit a phase or a stage in your life where you like drove Uber and worked, I believe, at Macy's maybe.
I worked at Macy's first.
What was that like when you think about like your journey of like you thought you'd pop off one way and then, you know, you figure out a way to make it about yourself and your brand. Like, what's that experience been like for you?
I think
the word fear is so real for me because for so long I was fearful of being me. So I had created this other persona. I created the Tabitha I thought that Hollywood wanted to see. You know, I'm from a small town in North Carolina, from Eden, and I'm Southern, I'm country. And so working in corporate America and then coming to the entertainment industry, I was always told I sound ignorant or you sound country, you need to cover your accent. And so I had mastered that so well that I almost forgot who I was, right? So I had to pretend all the time and wear my hair one way. I remember when I first got an agent, they were like, listen, with your skin complexion, you're gonna need to have your hair straight. So I was like, okay. And I believed that, you know, so.
That was a real conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Me, absolutely. Lose weight, right? Cover the accent, which said, forget about who you were, and this is who you need to be, and I believed it. And I did that for a very long time with, again, small victories. And it wasn't until I got sick and thought I was gonna die. When I said it earlier, when I said, God, if you heal me, you can have me, that meant now I gotta start showing up as the real Tab. Because it's exhausting to show up as somebody else every day that's not the real you. And God can't give you what he wanna give you if you ain't you, right? So I had to get to that place. And when I started showing up as me, I was very afraid.
Allison, I wanted to ask you, you are, I believe, the most, by medals, the most decorated track athlete ever, correct?
Female.
Okay, can we at least, let's clap that up, that's crazy. All right.
Was every win as important as each one, like every medal?
That's a good question. I feel like at each point in my life, I was like learning something new. And so I was still passionate, they were still important, but they were all different. Like my last Olympics was my fifth Olympics, my first as a mother. And I won a bronze individually, a gold with the relay. And that bronze medal, I think it means more than any gold.
Wow.
Because it was like overcoming all the adversity, like being a representation for women, for mothers. Like it just, it was everything. You know, I got to do it in my shoes that my company made. So
wow.
It was like full circle, all the things.
Where do you keep your medals at, by the way?
My parents keep them.
Yeah. At their house?
I've never been into like the medals, but you know, me. Parents, they like to brag and bring them out and all that stuff.
I'd have mine on during the show.
Like jewelry?
For sure.
Like jewelry, B?
For sure.
That's
I'm
the
sorry,
New York
team,
in you.
What were you saying? I'm sorry, I'm to
that's the New York in you, by the way.
Sure.
When you accomplish something, how fast do you put it behind you?
Yeah.
Like, you got a movie which people, I think, are going to love your performance. How fast would you go, like, okay, I'm on to something else now. I'm going to make something else. I'm going to find my next thing. How fast do you put those things? Like, you win medals and just give them to your mom. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm going to win the next one.
Because you got to start focusing on, you the know, next. What's ahead of you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't get stuck behind that. After that, I got White Man Can't Jump coming. Then after that, I got Hooker Clarence coming. So I'm like, okay, what's next? And most importantly, what these kids about to have me doing, you know what I'm saying? So it's never really a time.
They keep
to,
you quick on your feet.
Yeah, definitely keep you quick on your feet.
I feel
feet
like you sure. barely feel the success, but
yes.
The, when it doesn't go right, like that part to me, that's like, I feel that
you
more
feel
than anything.
That more.
Yeah.
So the pain or the failure, you feel that more than you do the success and the victories.
Because I think like there comes to a place where people expect like greatness out of you. So it's like you win something or whatever it is, you have a hit, like
Of course they did, yeah.
You think that's fair? How is that people?
Yeah, to me, I mean, it's not fair, but I think that
it's not fair.
Everybody doesn't understand it. Like,
but you don't think it's fair.
They build you up to bring you down.
Yeah. Fair. I mean, yeah, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Some people want you to win until you win.
That's what I'm saying. They build you up to bring you right on back down.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's gonna be what it's gonna be.
It's what you said earlier that I think a lot of people feel like there can only be one. You know, like there's only one.
Like there's not enough room for everybody.
Yeah, that's why I was like, even in the movie, I say one quote, like, you know, the only people who support black women is other black women, and even that shit get messy. Because
that's a great line. That's a bar.
She was selling it now.
You know what I'm saying? And it's because it's like we sit here and we claim woman empowerment, but are we really empowering one another? Like sometimes you'll lose the opportunity just because a girl that's intimidated by you don't want to stand next to you or don't want to be in the same room as you because she's intimidated or made feel like, or she run fast or she did, you know what I'm saying? It's just like nobody's ever really uplifting one another. So yeah, it's like.
It's gotta be intentional, right? Exactly. Every day my intention is to like spread love, to give joy, to share that.
But you also got a soothing voice.
Very
that I covered
I
for so long.
Videos. I just be laying there like.
Yeah. That doesn't mean I don't have bad days, but my intention is to make others feel well, right? I have a platform, so to me, it's a responsibility. And some days are rough, and I'll share that, but the majority, I am sharing positive information or positive feelings and love.
I would say majority of people do not share that same sentiment. Mm.
Right, so, but, and you know what's crazy? Yesterday, me and my husband, we were just talking about this. Somebody had did a video a couple months about me saying that I had toxic positivity. And I was like, dang. What kind of world do we live in that being positive is toxic?
What's that even mean?
They were like, can't nobody be that happy all the time. Like, it was a whole thing where any people were agreeing. And I was like,
wow.
Again, the pain they must be in to think that being positive is toxic.
Because you fell into it accidentally, mm-hmm. trying to do something else.
Yeah.
So were you actually having fun doing it, or it was just like, oh, I'm making money, I'm doing it, so I'm gonna keep fucking doing it? Or was it like, I actually like making these videos and like I'm enjoying it?
So in the beginning, I was very fearful. So if you go back and look at like all my old videos, because I cooked live every day at 5 o'clock. That was like, I made it like a job. I wasn't making no money. Listen, I would be cooking live. Some days I would cry because I'd be like, the Lord said thousands of minutes is 33 people on here, you know? And my husband, you would never see him, but you would hear him. And he'd be like, man, you got them people looking in our kitchen doing these videos. And I'm like, I'm trying to be obedient to what the Lord has told me to do.
That would have been me too,
100%.
I mean, listen, now that you've retired him, he could have shut the fuck up.
No,
but back then, I would definitely be like, man, you bringing all these people.
Hey, look, after the first check came, he was like, don't you need to do one of them videos today?
Almost 5 o'clock, ain't it?
Right.
5 o'clock.
Y'all going about y'all business and have the most amazing day. But even if you can't have a good one, don't you dare go messing up nobody else's hen. God bless you. I love you.
Thanks for listening to The Shop Uninterrupted. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening to the show. For full video episodes, check out Uninterrupted's YouTube channel. And for weekly show updates, follow The Shop Uninterrupted on social media.
You're listening to The Shop Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose vodka martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly. Sip responsibly. www.responsibledrinking.org. 2024, Grey Goose. Its trade dress and the geese device are trademarks. Imported by Grey Goose Importing Company, Coral Gables, Florida. Vodka, 40% alcohol by volume. Distilled from French wheat.